review, an unflinching gaze into the depths of human depravity. The podcast covers current crime news, updates on cold cases, and resources for research and investigation. True Crime Review often discusses disturbing and violent crimes, so listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to episode 8 of True Crime Review. To get started, I want to thank the following folks for offering kind words about the podcast on Facebook, iTunes, or Twitter. Carol, Laura, Diane, Fernandami, Jane, and Blondes X40X. You all and everybody else who has offered me any compliments or constructive criticism, my sincere thanks go out to you. Thanks so much for listening. Keep telling me what I'm doing right, what I'm doing wrong. You guys, the listeners and gals, make a podcast. Otherwise, I'm sitting at my kitchen table, literally talking to myself. In other news, I updated the big, huge list of true crime podcasts that I host on GitHub, but you can also find it at the website at truecrimereview.net/the-list. That's truecrimereview.net/the-list. There are more than 100 true crime podcasts on that list, and it's growing all the time. When I say more than 100, I don't mean 101. I mean, right now I think there's 128 in the most currently published update, and the one that I'll probably publish early next week is actually going to be, I think it's going to be past 130 at this point. So it's still growing. And that leads me to something I'm going to add into each episode, which is going to be a podcast recommendation, because there's no excuse for me not to tell you about a new podcast on every episode, considering I could do a recommendation like that every single week for almost 2.5 years without repeating myself even once. So, this week, I'm going to make my first recommendation, and that is to listen to Curiosity Kills. Two intelligent, irreverent, hilarious women named Lindsay and Haley take advantage of the acoustic enclosure of an automobile to record great conversations about true crime. The Facebook fan group is also awesome, so consider joining that too. You can find a link to the Curiosity Kills website in my show notes. You can find a direct link to their RSS in my show notes, so you can just copy and paste that right into your podcast listening app of choice. And there's also a link to the Facebook fan group. The group is closed, I think, because that way you can sort of talk freely about your interest in true crime without necessarily having to explain it to all of your family and friends on your in your broader Facebook community. So just request to join, and they will let you in with the quickness. Now, for the news. This week's news section starts with the murder of Gordon Semple. 50-year-old Stefano Brizzi is on trial for the murder of 59-year-old Metropolitan Police Constable Gordon Semple, whom he met through the gay dating app Grindr. Brizzi is accused of strangling Semple to death before attempting to dispose of and possibly to eat the victim's body. BBC News reports Semple's DNA was located on a blender blade, a cooking pot, and other kitchen items in Brizzi's home. Authorities also found bite marks on a bone fragment retrieved from Brizzi's kitchen trash can. police discovered the gruesome scene of the murder and its aftermath on April 7th, 2016, following complaints by neighbors of a revolting smell. The prosecutor said during the trial, which is still ongoing, that responding officers found, quote, bottles of chemicals scattered in the hall and blue-green liquid in the bath, with, quote, flesh-colored globules floating in the water, unquote. Pizzi said he did not intentionally kill Semple, instead telling authorities his death was accidental as the result of a sex game gone wrong. But I find it hard to believe someone who can say the following about somebody else would pass up the opportunity to kill. Brizzi is quoted as saying of Semple to authorities, "As you can see, this man was a very big man, and all I have left is two buckets." You can follow the BBC's coverage of the ongoing trial simply by searching BBC Gordon Semple, S-E-M-P-L-E, on your search engine of choice. There's also a link to that search on the BBC website in the show notes. As I like to do whenever possible, I'm going to read you some words from Gordon Semple's family and friends about his death, as published on kentnews.co.uk, and there will be a link to that in the show notes as well. Quote, in a statement, PC Semple's brother, Ronnie Semple, said, "On behalf of Gordon's partner, Gary, my wife, Maureen, Gordon's nephew, Paul, niece, Kerry, and I would like to thank everyone for their kind thoughts during the past dreadful week. It has been a terrible time for us all, especially Gary. Gordon will be sadly missed by all of his immediate family, his colleagues in the Met Police, former Bank of Scotland colleagues in Inverness and London, friends from his Tartan Army days, but most of all, the hardest loss is for Gary at this time. Gordon was a much-loved partner, brother, brother-in-law, uncle, and cousin, and our world will be a worse place without him." Friends remembered PC Semple as a great character and an old-school cop. Kevin Holland said, "R.I.P. Gordon, was there in my hour of need. Sorry I couldn't be there in his. Missed by many. One of life's great characters taken." While Christina Radu recalled him as a very happy, smiley man. Paul Hutchinson said, "Wish I could have been there for you at your time in need. My utmost pleasure to have known you. My thoughts to your family." Ronan Tynan wrote, "Have heard he was a great cop, old school, very, very sad reading this news. Deepest sympathies to the family, and I hope justice is served at the highest order." And Andrew Cook added, "Rest peacefully, brother. You've booked off your last shift here, and I know you are starting rest days in a better place." An update now on Erica Parsons. WCCB Charlotte reported on October 13th that authorities will not release Erica's body for 2 or even 3 months while the investigation into her death continues. We reported in prior episodes that the girl's adoptive father led police to her body on September 27th, and the body has been with the Rowan County Medical Examiner's Office since. Donors have already paid for her burial, but funeral arrangements will not be announced until the body is officially released by the medical examiner. Prevent Child Abuse Rowan Chapter continues to accept donations in Erica's name, and I will make sure there is a link in the show notes if you are considering making a donation to them. The next story, the last story in the news section, is about Sarah de Leon. Sarah de Leon was murdered on December 29, 1989, in Kansas City, Kansas. She had been stabbed, dealt a head wound, and left to die along some railroad tracks. She was 18 years old, and decades passed without significant activity on the case of the murder of this young college student. Then Carol J. Heckert, arrested only 20 miles from Kansas City, was charged in early October 2016 with Sarah's murder. Authorities also suspect Sarah De Leon's murder may be related to a 1987 abduction and the 1994 homicide. You can find a link to a Facebook page called Justice for Sarah in the show notes. Now, as for some words from Sarah's family, I'm going to read a post from that Facebook page that, when I read it earlier this week, infuriated me. I'll let it speak for itself. Attention. It is with sadness that we must even post this. It has come to our attention that representatives from the TV show 48 Hours have been deceiving people to gain interviews on Sarah and Diana Olt's cold cases. We have heard from many people that these representatives are dropping the names of family members from both families in order to secure quick interviews for this story and beat other networks in airing it. To be clear, we are not working with the TV show 48 Hours and have admonished them to stop using these deceptive tactics for their own competitive interests. Again, it is sad that we even have to announce this, but we do not want any self-serving interest to potentially jeopardize all of the hard work put into seeing justice done for these girls. Neither do we want anyone to misrepresent the family's stories and their fight for justice. Thank you. So you can take from that what you will. Obviously, that's one side of a story. I will likely share a link to this episode and or that Facebook post and mention 48 Hours and try to see if they have anything to say from their side. It's likely that they're going to not be interested in commenting because these are unfortunately tactics I've read about before, not specifically from 48 Hours, but this is not an uncommon thing in television production. It seems to me that sometimes ethics and just basic humanity are put aside when people are put under the pressure of deadlines and competition and ratings. And that is a really unfortunate thing. So again, you can follow the Justice for Sarah Facebook page for more updates on this case. And you can do a search for Diana Olt, who is the victim of the other homicide to which authorities suspect this case, the Sarah De Leon murder, may be linked. Okay, now on to their resource. Now, I'm going to say right now that this section is not an advertisement. It's just going to sound like one. But it's a really cool deal, and I was pretty excited about it, so I thought this was the perfect place to share it. There are many kinds of armchair detective. Some study the history, and there's really no better podcast for those folks than Richard O. Jones's True Crime Historian. But that's not the resource. Go listen. Subscribe. Not the resource. Others study criminology and behavioral analysis, and those folks probably would enjoy listening to Real Crime Profile with Jim Clemente, Laura Richards, and Lisa Zambetti. But not the resource. Go subscribe. Go listen. Amazing podcast. Not the resource. There are those among us also who can stomach the autopsy reports, the crime scene photos, and the other ways you can attempt to recreate not only a crime scene, but the actual timeline of how the crime itself took place. And for people like us, The Atlas of Forensic Pathology is likely to be a macabre treasure. The tome by Drs. Charles V. Whetley, Roger E. Middleman, and Valerie J. Rao is nothing less than a textbook for what to expect when performing a forensic autopsy. And in true textbook fashion, it usually costs more than $100. But the publisher, the American Society for Clinical Pathology, is selling this atlas for 75% off the list price as some kind of autumn flash sale or something. I ordered my copy earlier this week for $35 plus shipping, and it came in at just under $40 total. Now, I'm sure parts of this thing will be a little bit over the head of a layperson like myself, but that's a good problem to have when it comes to information on complex topics. Can you find a lot of stuff like this around the internet? I'm sure you can. But there's something to be said for having it all compiled into a researched, organized textbook format. Have this thing sitting on the table, sitting on the desk. You know, you can have it next to you while you research a case. And you can still get one as of this recording. I just checked. And I even helped you out by making an easy-to-remember short URL. You can just go to bit.ly/forensicatlas. And you can order yours. Again, not an advertisement. But if ASCP has any interest, they can find us at podcast@truecrimereview.net. Because I think that was a pretty good ad read. Pretty well-written copy. If I don't say so myself. Which I just did. And now, on to the cold case. Monday, December 26th, 2011. Around 2:30 p.m. in Paradise Township, Monroe County, Pennsylvania. The torso of a man was found in a garbage bag. No head. No legs. No arms. A driver on Route 191 spotted the black garbage bag. An autopsy by the Monroe County Coroner's Office determined the victim was a male, likely between 45 and 60 years old. The coroner also said the man had been dead anywhere from 2 weeks to 2 months. And while the coroner did say the manner of death was homicide, he would not comment on whether he had determined the cause of death or the method of dismemberment. Fast forward to 2016. A Virginia laboratory used ancestry information gleaned from rib DNA to produce a composite portrait of what the man's face may have looked like. I'm going to say that one more time because it really fascinated me. A Virginia laboratory used ancestry information gleaned from rib DNA to produce a composite portrait of what the man's face may have looked like. State Trooper Craig Van Lavender is a state police criminal investigator at the Swiftwater Barracks. He told local ABC affiliate Newswatch 16, quote, "They believe," they being the laboratory, "they believe that we should be looking maybe in the area of South Pennsylvania, in the states of Tennessee, Kentucky, but also isotope readings were consistent with people who might be living in coastal California. They also believe the victim's subsisting on a rice-based diet more than a corn-based diet." So, the composite portrait will be in the show notes. It will likely be the cover art for this episode. And if you recognize the man in the sketch, or think you might recognize the man in the sketch, or you were anywhere in the area around Paradise Township and saw any shady activity near Route 191 that may have involved a trash bag, they never found any other parts of this victim. And, you know, I talk big talk about giving voices to the victims here. This victim doesn't even have a name yet, and certainly not alone in that regard. Unfortunately, there's a massive database, as you likely already know, called NamUs, that is specifically used to track and store information about the missing persons and unidentified decedents. If you look at this portrait or you read about the story, there are a few links in the show notes, and you think you might know something, consider calling the Pennsylvania State Police tip hotline at 1-800-4-PA-TIPS. That's the number 4-PA-TIPS. I want to thank you all for listening to episode 8. Go to truecrimereview.net/subscribe to subscribe via your favorite app or service. You can find us on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Google Play. You can also find us on social media. We're on Twitter at truecrimerev. Find us on Facebook, Instagram, and just about everywhere else under the username truecrimereview. Please, if you are listening through iTunes or the podcasts app on your iOS device, leave a review on iTunes. Also, you know, if you're not an iTunes listener, then just tell a friend. Just ask a friend to have a listen. Give it a try. If you know anybody you think might be interested in true crime or podcasts like this, or you know somebody who's really a fan of Forensic Files, almost anything on ID Discovery, ask them to have a listen, and hopefully they will enjoy what they hear. And even if they don't, you can show them the list. More than 100 true crime podcasts. There's got to be one in there they love. Theme music is Our Planet is Lost by Entropy Audio. Find more at entropyaudio.bandcamp.com. Thank you for listening to this episode of True Crime Review. And remember, families deserve truth. Victims deserve voices.